As U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza continues for 155th day, more Palestinians die as starvation is being used by the regime as a weapon of war. Spokesperson for the Hamas military wing stresses priority to strike a prisoner swap deal is ending the aggression completely. In Iraq's Islamic Resistance conducts drone attacks on an Israeli intelligence base in occupied Golan Heights and on oil facilities in the port of Haifa. Now, more than 5 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, the regime's indiscriminate attacks continue, claiming more civilian lives. The latest strikes have hit different locations, from northern Gaza to its central and southern parts. 8 people, most of them children, were killed in the southern city of Khan Yunis. Over 12 people lost their lives in Israeli attacks on 2 homes in the town of Al-Qarara, northeast of Khan Yunis. And dozens more were also wounded. A refugee camp in Jabalia, the cities of Deir al-Bala and Rafah, as well as Gaza City, were also targeted. Total death toll is now nearing 30,880. Also, over 72,400 others have been injured in this war, along with U.S. complicity. Starvation in the besieged Gaza Strip continues to take the lives of the most vulnerable of Palestinians. 3 more children have lost their lives as Israel is blocking 8 trucks trying to enter the coastal territory. The Gaza Health Ministry says children died from lack of water and malnutrition. Now, starvation has taken 23 lives in Gaza in recent days. Meanwhile, 5 Palestinians, including children, have been killed and several injured after being hit by aid airdropped by the U.S. The incident took place when parachutes attached to that aid failed to open, causing boxes to fall on crowds that had gathered to collect them. Israel's blocked entry of almost all essentials into Gaza, including foodstuff, water, and medicine, since the regime began its onslaught in early October. The military wing of Hamas says the people of Palestine are facing unprecedented U.S.-Israeli hostility as the Gaza Strip is still under bombardment and siege. A spokesman for the Al-Qassam Brigades described Israel as an occupying regime devoid of humanitarian values, adding the Nazi-like massacres are being perpetrated in Gaza. Abu Ubaidah noted international law is unable to stop Israel from committing crimes against Palestinians. He said rules of the international community are worn out and ineffective, adding those rules are at the service of hegemonic powers. He also touched on a potential ceasefire, saying priority to strike a prisoner swap deal is to end the Israeli aggression altogether. Ubaidah also referred to anti-Israeli operation launched by Palestinians in early October. He emphasized Al-Aqsa flood was a response to decades of enmity and atrocities against Palestinians. In the military wing of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad Resistance Movement has released videos showing its fighters opening fire on Israeli soldiers and targeting them with improvised explosive devices. The Al-Quds Brigades conducted an operation against an Israeli military site near a settlement called Tomish. An explosive device was detonated when regime forces arrived there, causing injuries to at least 7 Israeli troops. The Israeli military described the incident as serious and then launched a manhunt for those behind the operation. Meanwhile, Hamas hailed the operation as heroic and a natural response to Israel's massacres in Gaza and the West Bank, as well as the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and occupied Al-Quds. And it vowed painful blows to the heart of the Israeli entity and settlers will increase in the month of Ramadan. And there is no respite from violent Israeli acts against Palestinians, whether in Gaza or elsewhere. The regime's military has carried out fresh raids on several areas of the occupied West Bank. Raided areas include Nur Shams refugee camp in Tulkarm, Israeli forces also clashed with Palestinians during their incursion into that camp. The Palestinians did manage to blow up an Israeli bulldozer. Elsewhere in the West Bank, regime's troops stormed a residential building in the city of Qalqilia. Another Israeli incursion took place at the Askar camp near the city of Nablus. Now, since October the 7th, the occupied territories have been witnessing intensified raids by regime forces. Hundreds of Palestinians have been killed and thousands abducted in the West Bank in over 5 months. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it's carried out more attacks on Israel in solidarity with the Palestinians of Gaza. The resistance group says it's targeted regime's intelligence base in the occupied Golan Heights, and another attack targeted Israel's oil facilities in the port city of Haifa. The group says it used drones to hit the sites. There are no immediate reports of casualties or damage yet, but in recent months, Islamic Resistance in Iraq has carried out a number of attacks against Israeli positions and occupied territories. It's also attacked U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for Washington's support for Israel's campaign of genocide. Thousands of Muslims have rallied outside the U.S. Embassy in the Indonesian capital, Jakarta, to condemn Israel's genocidal war on Palestinians and call for a ceasefire in Gaza.
Israel.
Carrying Palestinian flags and banners as well as chanting slogans, protesters marched down a major street outside the embassy. Despite heavy police deployments, they halted traffic along the way. The demonstration was organized by more than a dozen Islamic groups, which denounced U.S. support for Israel and demanded Washington push Tel Aviv to open more aid routes into Gaza as hunger in the besieged enclave mounts. Similar rallies were also held in the South Korean capital, Seoul, in condemnation of Israeli atrocities.
This demonstration started at the Seoul Central Mosque as Muslims around the world are, you know, demonstrating in their opposition to the true genocide that's taking place now in Gaza, with the recent massacre happening in Rafah as people queued to receive humanitarian aid. This news is getting around the world and bringing people out in the street, like here today in South Korea, a country that really doesn't look too strongly at what's going on in the Middle East, and yet people are recognizing that, you know, yes, South Korea does have some involvement with countries in the Middle East, including a rather, you know, now contentious relationship with Israel, as it enjoys $4 billion in trade with Israel, as well as, you know, arms trade of tens of millions of dollars. Well, generally here, the government is trying to take sort of a middle course because, again, of its trade with Israel and its alliance relationship with the United States. Also, it relies, you know, at the same time on its energy security toward Saudi Arabia and the UAE. So the government has been slow both to condemn Israel and hesitant to condemn Israel.
Breaking news, 4 more Palestinians have been killed by Israeli military strikes in the Sheikh Radwan neighborhood northwest of Gaza City. Apparently 82 Palestinians have been killed in the last day and 122 injured. We're encroaching upon 31,000 fatalities since October 7th, well over 72,000, almost 500 injured in the besieged enclave, along with thousands missing and presumed buried under rubble. As soon as we find out more about those last 4 Palestinians killed in the Radwan neighborhood, we'll give that to you, out to you accordingly. Meanwhile, Austria, pro-Palestinian protesters have held a demonstration during International Women's Day in the capital, Vienna. They aim to raise public awareness of the plight of the women in Gaza. Our correspondent has interviewed some of the demonstrators.
So today we gathered and we were present at the Vienna Rathaus municipality on an open event on the occasion of International Women's Day. We wanted to protest the hypocrisy of the celebration. We wanted to remind everyone that women's rights is for everyone. We wanted to raise awareness about the situation of Palestinian women in Gaza who are suffering the worst condition ever since the 5 months. Every single day 63 women are being murdered. So far 9,000 women are killed by the Israeli occupation forces. There are 60,000 women pregnant currently at risk of dying for lack of food, for lack of healthcare. So we wanted to synthesize everybody about that. When we talk about women's rights, it's about women's rights everywhere. It's about women's rights of everyone. And we wanted to urge people to stop violence against Palestinian women.
So today is the Global Day for Women. It should be a day for celebration. It should be a day and an opportunity for us to rejoice. But we cannot celebrate this day knowing that our sisters in Palestine are suffering, and they haven't only been suffering these last 5 months, but also the past 75 years. We have heard the most gruesome reports about women having to undergo cesareans without an anesthesia. We've heard of newborn children, prematurely born children, which were forced to be left in their incubators, and they were found decomposing later on. We know that women no longer are nourished enough or have enough food to actually breastfeed their own children. So we have a very high mortality of young children under the age of 2. It's just a despicable situation, and it's absolutely intolerable. And we refuse as women to only focus on, let's say, white women feminism. It is important to improve our rights here in the West, but we really have to stand up for those people in other countries who are suffering and who are struggling to survive. And that is our obligation if we want to stand together as women worldwide.
And over to France and around the world, women and men took to the streets to celebrate International Women's Day. Gender equality is defined differently in different countries, but most agree all societies must improve the empowerment of women. Rami Mazahiri reports.
On the International Day for Women's Rights, demonstrations and pro-feminism strikes were held around France by women and the men who support their fight for equality. In October 1789, the Women's March on Versailles apprehended King Louis XVI at his luxurious palace and brought him to justice in Paris. But much work remains to be done in Republican France. Only 37% of French Parliament is female. Two-thirds of France's working poor are women, in large part because women compose 80% of France's part-time workers.
A return to far-right economic austerity after the COVID lockdowns hurt women more than any other minority. Women are more likely to work in the government and to use social services, so cuts to government budgets hurt them more than men.
In France, one woman is killed every 3 days by their partner or ex-partner. Our government must take more measures to protect the safety of our women. We also need policies which abolish the male-female pay gap and which better protect women from rape.
Israel's attempted genocide of Gaza has had a disastrous effect on women. From the starvation of 60,000 pregnant women to the forced displacement of 1 million females to the inhuman and degrading treatment of women by Israeli forces, according to the United Nations, to the murder of nearly 10,000 women.
Israel's genocide in Gaza is an issue for all feminists and for all humanists. Anyone who thinks that we are at the wrong march are obviously just Zionist imperialists. And they also obviously do not understand what it means to support women with equality, respect, and justice.
Globally, 60% of poor people are women. They are paid 23% less than a man, even when doing the same work, and they spend 2.5 more hours doing domestic chores than men.
We have made some progress pushing women's rights to the forefront, but we must demand many other advancements. We must also not forget about the rights of girls, many of whom suffer from sexual violence, and who must be better protected and better represented by our government.
In France and much of the West, women suffer from widespread objectification and the commodification of their bodies. France allows the use of naked women in public advertising, which many say undermines its regular claim to be a feminist model which other nations must emulate. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Thousands of Yemenis have taken to the streets of Sana'a and other cities to reaffirm support for the Palestinian people. Demonstrators also praised recent operations of Yemen's army against the U.S., U.K., and Israeli-linked vessels. Abdulatif Al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
Yemenis from all walks of life gathered in the capital Sana'a and other major cities and chanted slogans in praise of the Yemeni army's naval operations. They also reaffirmed their full support for the Palestinian people and pledged to continue the protests until the Israeli genocide ceases.
The Yemeni government, all its members, its president and the people have one position, which is to support the Palestinian cause. We must thwart the American, Israeli and British project and stop starvation in Palestine. Our position is an honorable position and our broad movement indicates that the Yemenis have great awareness and, God willing, victories for the nation will be at hand.
Protesters expressed support for the Yemeni army's naval operations against Western vessels, stating that the Palestinian cause helped the Yemeni people overcome the problems created by the Western powers in the country. They believe the conspiracy targets the whole region, not just Palestine or Yemen, and call on all Muslims to unite to thwart Western projects.
We went out today in Sana'a, as you can see, and in the rest of the governorates to announce to the world that our demonstrations and our position is a religious position that will not change with regimes or rulers. We will continue to insist on our position until our brothers in Gaza are victorious, receive food and medicine, and the U.S.-Israeli genocide against them stops. Our army will also continue its operations until the aggression against our country stops. Our operations are escalating, and upcoming strikes will stun both friends and enemies.
Our demonstration here in Sana'a and other governorates is to send a message that we as Yemenis have been able to overcome all the differences and problems that the enemies sought to create inside Yemen. The other message is that we continue to support the Palestinian cause, and what is happening in Gaza is shameful for all Arabs and Muslims. The operations of our army in the Red Sea and Bab al-Mandab are completely linked to what is happening to the people of Gaza, and the escalation of naval military operations is a legitimate move to support the Palestinian cause.
Recently, the Yemeni army intensified its naval attacks against American, British and Israeli-linked vessels and regional waterways, resulting in the sinking of a British vessel in the Gulf of Aden. It also attacked an American vessel, which the U.S. claimed led to loss of lives among the ship's crew members.
Yemenis assert that the success of Yemeni naval attacks, despite the presence of Western warships in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden, demonstrates the capability and the high-tech weaponry possessed by the Yemeni army. They believe this achievement should inspire other regional forces to join the fight and support the Palestinians in face of the common enemies. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Limelight.
Recently, starving Palestinians were queuing for long-awaited deliveries of food in Gaza City's Al-Rashid Street when the Zionist regime forces opened fire on them. According to Gaza health officials, a minimum of 112 people were killed and 280 injured, the majority of whom appear to have been shot. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Arif Abed had heard that some aid was to be delivered. Together with his brother Atef and a few friends, he went to Al-Rashid Street, southwest of Gaza City. They spent the night outdoors, catching a few hours' sleep. Early in the morning, they heard people shout happily that trucks carrying food had finally arrived. Many international organizations had stopped delivering aid to the northern half of Gaza a few months ago. It was unsafe for them to operate there. With food extremely scarce, people in the north are starving. Arif and his friends rushed toward the trucks when they stopped. Before they had reached them, they saw Israeli regime troops opening fire from tanks on hundreds of people. Many were shot as they climbed onto a truck seeking a packet of flour. Others were hit as they carried their packets toward their families. Arif said one of the tanks moved ahead and drove on the bodies that were on the ground. We heard the cries of many people before they were killed by tanks running over them. Soon the flour and packaging was covered in blood. The violence was merciless. According to Arif, some people who survived being run over started begging for help. Arif ran away from the trucks. At the same time, the Zionist regime attacked the crowd from the air. After the bombardment stopped, Arif and his relatives hurried to transport the injured to nearby hospitals. Hundreds of people were left bleeding to death as ambulances could not reach the scene for some time. Some people attempted to bring the wounded to the hospital using donkey carts. When they went to one of the hospitals, Arif asked his brother Atef to go and fetch food for one of the patients. Atef managed to find some canned food and some flour and baked some bread. He felt that baking it was a small triumph as the patient had not eaten bread made with flour for a month. As flour is unavailable in markets, she had been eating bread made with animal feed. Even that had become impossible as animal feed had run out. The patient had kidney failure and should be undergoing dialysis 3 times per week because of electricity cuts. She has only been having dialysis once a week lately in Ashrafa, Gaza's largest hospital, Atef said. She was starving to death. She cried with happiness that she could finally taste bread. RF and RTF witnessed what has become known as the Flower Bag Massacre. At least 112 people were killed in the attack. It was among the bloodiest incidents since the Zionist regime declared its current genocidal war on Gaza. Anas Sopi had come to Al-Rashid Street about an hour before the 8 trucks arrived. He was seeking food for 10 members of his extended family. They included his parents and his 6 children. Once the trucks were spotted coming from the south, many people applauded. Anas hoped that he would get some aid. Over the previous week, his wife had to cook grass with dough made from animal feed on a wood fire. They told their children that the grass was khubza, a leafy plant used in a number of traditional Palestinian dishes. At other times, the family have not been able to find ingredients for dough. The only food items they had were salt and lemons that had begun to rot. Like many others, Anas and his friend Radi hurried towards the 8 trucks as soon as they arrived on Al-Rashid Street. As soon as he got close to the first truck, which was carrying flour, the Zionist regime troops in tanks began firing towards the crowd. A quadcopter also began attacking them from above. Anas was so desperate for food that he and a friend kept moving toward the 8 trucks, where they succeeded in getting hold of some packets. Soon afterwards, his friend Radi was shelled in the back and fell to the ground. Anas saw one of his neighbors, the neighbor and his 3 sons, lifted Anas and the wounded Radi onto a cart. With the help of his neighbor, Anas made it back to his family, but Radi died. Anas said he was killed while trying to get some food. He was trying to keep his starving family alive. Muhammad Balusha had promised his mother that he would come back with a bag of flour. They had discussed how the flour would then be used to make Muhammad's favorite breakfast. Marrakesh, a dough topped with the herb za'atar. Muhammad liked to eat it with cheese. And so Muhammad went to fetch aid with a group of others from Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. He was so determined to get some provisions that he kept advancing toward the 8 trucks on Al-Rashid Street when the Zionist regime troops had opened fire. He managed to obtain some flour, yet was struck with a bullet in his head soon afterwards. His friend Ahmad drove him to Kamal Adwan Hospital in the northern city of Beit Lahia. An emergency operation proved unsuccessful. Muhammad died the next day. Ahmad had to break the terrible news to Muhammad's mother. Apart from salt, Muhammad had not eaten anything for several days before he was shot. Ahmad said, "My friend Muhammad was hungry when he was killed. There is no form of murder worse than what happened to him."
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello, welcome to The Spotlight. I'm Kaveh Tapway. What's happening in the Gaza Strip is reminiscent of the starved Yemeni children, a war that was backed and supported by the U.S. In the Gaza Strip, Palestinians are dying of hunger, especially children. in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. 500,000 Palestinians are fighting for their lives from starvation. There now is no doubt that Israel, backed by the U.S., is using food as a weapon of war, a war crime in itself. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how systematically Israel is ethnically cleansing Palestinians, even though there is a ceasefire agreement that is being discussed, although chances of that is very thin. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Spotlight. Mohammed Abu Saada is a professor of political science at Al-Azhar University who joins us from Cairo. Also joining us is Daniel Shaw, academic and commentator who joins us from New York.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gemma, welcome. It's another grim day for the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, but we're looking at the starvation factor here. 2.4 million Palestinians, roughly. Mohammed Abu Saada, I'm going to start with you first. Of which 500,000 are fighting for their lives due to starvation. The food insecurity obviously engulfs the entire population. UNRWA has said it has not been able to deliver food in over a month. There is aid going in, but not only does it not reach the Palestinians, when it does, they get killed in the process. Do you think that Israel is using food as a weapon, which is a war crime in itself, against the Palestinian population?
Well, the quick answer to your question is yes. This is what Israel has been doing for the past 5 months, especially against the Palestinians who are stuck and trapped in the north of Gaza, who did not leave at the beginning of this war 5 months ago, and now they are very much trapped and stuck in the north of Gaza. And very much Israel doesn't allow humanitarian assistance and food to reach to the north of the Gaza Strip. And to the best of my knowledge, some Palestinians have died as a result of hunger. And also many hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in the north of Gaza are eating animals' food. They have been eating tree leaves to try to survive. The situation there is very catastrophic. I have two brothers who are still based in the north of Gaza. Sometimes I talk to them whenever there are communications with them, mobile communications. The situation is more than catastrophic, more than tragic. One simple reason, Israel is very much using hunger and starvation as a weapon to try to drive the Palestinians from the north back to the south. Even though it's been 5 months since Israel has started this military operation against the Palestinians in Gaza, it seems to me that Israel is still insisting on evacuating the north of Gaza from the Palestinians and drive them to the south, even though their life or their livelihood in the south is not going to be better. Roughly 1.5 million Palestinians in Rafah in the south of Gaza are also facing death and facing Israeli pounding day after day. It's a very catastrophic situation. And the least I can say about that, what the International Court of Justice said about a month ago, what Israel is doing, there is a plausible reason to believe that Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza. That's the least that can be said about what is happening now.
Did you say that you have two brothers that are in the north of the Gaza Strip?
Yes, I do have two brothers with their families are still in the north of Gaza, yes.
All right, we're going to get into that a little bit because that's where the core of the 500,000 Palestinians who are dying of starvation is. But Daniel Shaw, when you take a look at what Israel is doing, another prevention are the aid trucks. There are roughly 2,008 trucks that are at the crossings that are not being allowed to get into the Gaza Strip. And if there are 8 trucks that are going into the Gaza Strip, they target the 8 trucks where the most recent one, where 2 occasions of massacres happened, but the one that caught the world's attention, that's now being labeled as the Flower Massacre. Bullets were discovered on the ones that were killed. What is the story with that? Why would they do that, do you think?
Colonialism is humiliation. Colonialism is complete control. It was with French colonialism in Algeria. It was with the British and Dutch Afrikaners in South Africa. It was with the U.S. Attacks against Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, the dirty war against Syria, the sanctions against Iran and Venezuela. And it's no different with Israeli Zionism against the Palestinian people since 1948. It's been a long, slow, and now accelerated process of ethnic cleansing, of apartheid. The fact that we have to even say these words out loud in 2024, it harkens back to 1492 and to 1620 when the pilgrims first massacred the Wampanoags. And to think that so many of our people across the United States, across the quote-unquote Western world, still stand on the side of colonialism, white supremacy, and Zionism is unconscionable for me. You know, the Holocaust is being televised. The genocide is being televised. There's no excuse to not look at alternative sources of information. We know that the Zionists have done everything to control the narrative over this. And when we make that point, they accuse us of anti-Semitic tropes for telling the truth. But the point is that the mainstream media, from CNN to Fox to the New York Times, is completely complicit in this genocide, and history is recording this.
Taking a look at what the U.S. Role is over here, let's go back to the most recent active role that the U.S. played when it comes to food, Mukhabar Abbasada, and that is the food drop that took place, airdropping and parachuting these parcels. 38,000, we understand, sandwiches and dates, I believe, and you're looking at the 500,000 that are dying of starvation with 2.4 million who are hungry. Why do you think the U.S. would do something like that, the ratio being so low in terms of the number of food parcels, knowing that there's so many that are dying as a result of starvation?
Well, that definitely is a very good question here. Well, let me say that I think the U.S. decided at the end of the day to airdrop food for the starving Palestinians in the Gaza Strip for 2 reasons. One is that the massacre that took place on the early morning of last Thursday, a week ago, which, as you mentioned, you refer to it as the flower massacre or the flower carnage that Israel was responsible for, that led to the death of more than 100 Palestinians and the injury of many hundreds of others. According to reports from the U.S., that the U.S. administration was not happy with the Israeli a government that is not allowing food to reach to the north, so the U.S. decided to airdrop food, which didn't really mean a lot for the thousands of Palestinians who are hungry and starving in the north of Gaza. And second, I think it's more of like a PR campaign by the U.S. The U.S. Internally, among the American people who believe that this current administration led by President Joe Biden has done a very poor job when it comes to the Palestinians and helping the Palestinians who are facing death and starvation. And also, I think the U.S. is trying to improve its image among the region, among the residents of the Middle East region, who basically look at the U.S. as a partner and at least a complicit in this war of genocide against the Palestinians in Gaza. And I think the U.S. decided to do that to try to make itself look much better. But again, as you just mentioned, the amount of food which was dropped by the U.S. on areas of the Gaza Strip doesn't satisfy the minimum need of the hundreds or of thousands of Palestinians who are hungry. And if they are not dying of Israeli pounding, they are Some of them are now dying of hunger and starvation.
All right, Daniel Shah, to dig deeper into this, you know, this is a very calculated move. This 38,000 figure, I don't think this figure just came out of the blue. I'm sure there were some who sat and analyzed the situation and figured out a number that needs to be airdropped, knowing full well that this is not going to meet the standards and the demand that's on the ground. Do you think that perhaps the U.S., in consultation with Israel, wants the starving Palestinians to be used as a tool in order to convince Hamas, you know, this truce talks or ceasefire talks that are happening, to convince Hamas to agree to this temporary ceasefire, that maybe it's using that as a tool?
Zionism, with full U.S. backing, is using any tools that they can. This is an informational war on Palestine, and it has been since 1948. Of course, it's a military war. They're now using starvation and dehydration on day 154 against 2.3 million civilians. And we don't hear the Zionists ever recognize, and they never will, the humanity of Palestinians. They label every single Palestinian baby, child, teenager, mother, elder, family member as Hamas, Hamas, Hamas. No one stopped to ask on the Zionist side, do the Palestinians have a right to defend themselves? They always talk about the Israeli right to violence and self-defense. Well, what about the oppressed? What about the occupied? What about the colonized? The world is fully awake, the Muslim world, the Arab world, the third world. But here I'm in New York City and across the United States. There's such a dictatorship over information, over the media. They pretend to believe in democracy, but they don't, because overwhelmingly, specifically among young people, this genocide is extremely unpopular. And now they're going after TikTok. They've threatened to come after our TikTok at Midwestern Marks and many other organizations. So I think the hypocrisy for them to talk about freedom of speech and freedom of press. And certainly this number of 38,000 meals is extremely paltry, but I think they're doing it too so they can try to cover their backsides and one day say, well, look, we had these airlifts, so we were not complicit in the starvation and Holocaust of the Palestinian people in Gaza.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, the problem is whether people are buying it or not. And Mukhabir Abusaidov, let me ask you this. Do you think people understand the scale of the involvement of the U.S. when it comes to this genocidal war? I mean, just the day before, the report came out that the U.S. has quietly approved and delivered more than 100 separate foreign military sales, amounting to thousands of precision-guided bombs, munitions, all kinds of bunker buster bombs, etc. I mean, this is the reason why, in one way, form, or another, there are starving Gazans. Okay? So the U.S. is complicit in that regard because of this military assistance to a large degree. What do you think about the fact that the U.S. has continually provided Israel with military assistance?
Well, of course the Palestinian people know about the U.S. role in this war. Of course the Palestinian people know that the U.S. is more than complicit. The U.S., in other words, is a partner to this Israeli killing and Israeli pounding of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And I can tell you for a number of reasons. First, the U.S. has used its veto power three times. Since the start of this war on October 7th until now, the U.S. has used its veto power three times to block any UN resolution at the UN Security Council to reach an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and put an end to this Israeli genocide and Israeli killing of the Palestinians. Second, from the beginning of this war, Israel deployed its warplane carriers in the Mediterranean to try to deter other countries or other non-state actors to get involved in this war between Israel and the Palestinian resistance. And also, as you just mentioned, Israel has, the U.S. has also supplied Israel with a lot of weaponry. Ships and airplanes full of ammunition and weapons have been provided to Israel over the past 5 months. And in addition to that, the U.S. is repeating day after day that Israel has the right to defend itself. Israel has the right to defend itself. Israel has the right to do whatever it finds it. I mean, lately we just started to hear that the U.S. patience with Netanyahu and the right wing in Israel is fading away as a result of extreme right-wing policies by Netanyahu's partner in this government. But yes, the Palestinian people, they are aware of the fact that the U.S. has been helping Israel politically, economically, and militarily. And it's, I mean, in the age of social media and the age of information revolution, I think you cannot really hide what the U.S. has been doing. Not during this war, but even before the war erupted, or before this war erupted in October 7th.
The ceasefire talks that are taking place, which are hanging by a thread, Daniel Shah, has a lot of sticking points and divisive issues in it. One of them is the request by Hamas for this to be a permanent ceasefire, but yet Israel and the U.S. are adamant about it being a partial ceasefire, not a permanent one. Why is there such an insistence on that, do you think, by the U.S. side?
Yeah, one is left to wonder. I mean, the U.S. government has the highly paid intelligence experts who are monitoring 25 hours per day, 8 days a week, everything that goes on, not just in Palestine, but in Ukraine and Taiwan and Guyana, and always waging these proxy wars. Why would they want an all-out genocide of an indigenous people of the Middle East on Biden's record, on the U.S. government's record? Well, that's because whether it's Biden or I think Trump to a lesser extent, liberalism is hegemony. And liberalism corresponds to the needs and the profits of the Lockheed Martins, of the General Dynamics, of these massive military corporations. That's why you have 100 secret weapon sales. That's why they're trying to push forward $14 billion more for the Israeli General Sebeis, and then for the proxy war, $60 million more, even though it's still been caught up in the House of Representatives. And to be demanding a ceasefire after 154 days of genocide, I mean, this is not an outlandish demand. This is really asking for crumbs. I mean, humanity is asking for the Palestinians to have a place to breathe. Humanity is asking for a Palestinian state and Palestinian self-determination. So the fact that we can't even get ceasefire, even though we have millions of people mobilized across Western Europe, across Africa, across New York City, the entire world is standing up against the U.S. and Israeli axis of genocide and demanding justice. The fact that they are continue to ignore us shows you how unpopular the U.S. government is in the world. And this is going to have a colonial boomerang of violence effect in the upcoming days, months, and years. Who could ever trust the Israelis again? Just when the Israelis were thought that they could sit down with the Saudis and with other neighbors, the Israelis have shown just how unneighborly and genocidal they are.
Israel's economy is not doing well. Mukhabir Abu Masada, just to change gears here, and we're looking at a warning to the Prime Minister Netanyahu by the U.S. Treasury Secretary, who told him, listen, you got to make sure that the economy in the West Bank is going to flow, that it's not going to tank. This is pretty interesting, because if it's issuing that warning to Netanyahu, doesn't that mean that if the West Bank falls apart and goes into the direction of the Gaza Strip, which at this point is in crisis levels now, with the killings and the abductions, etc. Don't you think that that poses an existential threat to Israel when its economy is not doing well and the West Bank economy is teetering on that as well?
Well, what I can tell you about that is that the U.S. is trying to do its best to stabilize the West Bank and to keep also Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, under control. The last thing that the U.S. and Israel would like to see, especially during the month of Ramadan, which is approaching in a few days, is instability in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, which, by the way, Israel is sometimes trying to provoke the Palestinians through its incursions and into West Bank cities like Jenin, Nablus, and other Palestinian cities, trying to provoke the Palestinians into a new intifada or an eruption of violence against Israel. And as I mentioned, that would be the last thing that the U.S. would like to see, in addition to what did to the carnage and the genocide that is taking place in the Gaza Strip. And I think the U.S. has been asking Israel to do two things. One is that Israel has been withholding PA, Palestinian Authority, money, taxes, and revenues right. For the past 5 months. Israel claimed that part of that money goes to the Palestinians in Gaza, and even though those Palestinians in Gaza are not members of Hamas, but Israel is trying to punish the Palestinians collectively. And second, there are more than 100,000 Palestinian laborers who are from the West Bank, and since the war erupted, they are no longer working, and that is destabilizing the situation in the West Bank now.
Thank you. We're unfortunately fresh out of time. Thank you, Mukhabir Abu Sada, Professor of Political Science at Al-Azhar University. Daniel Shah, thank you, academic and commentator from New York. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mika Vitale and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman, Allah, who is Al-Mannan.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atar, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have a very special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom and Islamic scholar, Sayyid Zain. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid Zain. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Okay, Sayyid Zain, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the recommended deeds that we must do when we visit the graves of our deceased dear ones. Are there any recommendations in Islam? For example, any supplication, any dua, any ayahs in the Holy Quran to be read out when visiting the tombs of our dear ones or deceased relatives, family and friends, or something like that?
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. It is recommended for us to go visit the graves of our relatives and the graves of the believers. For example, in the tradition say that on Thursday it's recommended, but if you can't go Thursday, then any day that you go, it's recommended. Now, what can we do there? So we can recite anything in the Quran, right? Anything is valuable that we can recite from the Quran. But there are certain surahs from the Quran that are given more importance and they're mustahab, such as Surah Al-Fatiha, right? Or Surah Al-Qadr.
Yes.
Right. So there's one narration that says that that the etiquettes are this: that a believer goes to the grave of another believer, puts his hand on the grave, faces the Qibla,
yes,
and recites Surah Al-Qadr 7 times.
Okay.
Right. Or for example, Ayatul Kursi.
Yes.
Right. Surah Al-Falaq, Surah Al-Nas, Yasin, right. Surah Al-Mulk. These surahs are, and the verse of Ayatul Kursi, they're recommended to be recited as well. Apart from this, there are duas that are mentioned too, and they're specific duas. One wants to see, you know, what they are, then Mafatih al-Jinan has a section on it of, yes, visiting the graves of the believers. And you can find different duas there, yes, and even like some of these narrations have been mentioned there about, you know, what kind of surahs you recite, okay, and the etiquettes and all these things. So it's a very good place to find out about.
What effect does it have, Sayyid? I mean, when you, for example, recite such dua, is it good for you who are reciting it, or no, for the deceased one? Because she has passed away.
So we're told that the thawab, that the blessing of what you recite and you do for them, it reaches them as well, especially sadaqah, right? Uh-huh. So giving charity in their name and for them, it does have an effect for them as well.
Yes.
And definitely it has an effect for ourselves too, if, yes, we do it, right? So if we're doing a good deed, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will reward that good deed for us as well. Apart from that, there is another benefit of visiting, you know, the graves, which is a reminder to ourselves that, you know, these people, they have passed, they have went,
yes,
and we are going to be following them soon as well, right? So reminding ourselves of the reality, which a lot of times we forget because of the nature of this world, we forget this reality that we are here only for a short amount of time.
Uh-huh.
The pleasures of this world are fleeting pleasures, they're going, they're not going to last. It's not so valuable. It's not in itself, it's not very valuable at all, this dunya. And visiting the graves, uh-huh, visiting the graveyards, that reminds us of this, that these people, just like us, walked and talked and, you know, they lived, they had worries, they had hopes, aspirations, yes, everything, right? They were human beings like us. And now they're under the ground, they're in their graves. And soon, we're going to be following them as well.
Even it is documented when Imam Ali alayhi salam were passing Wadi al-Salam Cemetery in the holy city of Najaf, there is a statement by Imam Ali alayhi salam talking to the deceased ones, okay? And the companions have documented such sayings of Imam Ali.